Welcome back to the lab. To the skeptic who believes in God, but isn't sure they like him, this is a very specific, quiet fear that many people have but rarely voice. You look at the universe, the complexity of DNA, and the fine-tuning of physics, and you admit, okay, there is probably a creator. But then you look at the rules. You see a God who draws hard lines about things like money, sexuality, and pride. And you think, if God made me with these desires, if I was born attracted to the same sex, or born with a temper, or born with a high drive for money, why would he call it a sin? Why would he build me one way and then judge me for acting on it? It feels like a trap. It feels like he is a cosmic bully who sets us up to fail just so he can punish us. And if that is true, maybe we shouldn't worship him. Maybe hell is just where the free thinkers go, and it might be better than spending eternity with a tyrant. This file is an audit of the character of God. We aren't asking if he is there. We are asking, is he good? Section 1. The Calibration Problem. Before we judge God, we have to inspect the tool we are using to judge him. If you say God is cruel, you are comparing him to a standard of kindness. If you say God is unjust, you are comparing him to a standard of justice. But let's look at history. In 1945, the Allied forces put the Nazi leaders on trial at Nuremberg. The Nazis argued a chilling defense. They said, "We did nothing illegal. We followed the laws of our own country." And they were right. By the definition of their own government, the Holocaust was legal. But the prosecutors argued that there is a higher law, a law of humanity, that transcends the laws of any nation. They argued that genocide is wrong objectively, regardless of what the local government says. Here is the dilemma. If there is no God, then good is just the opinion of the majority. If the Nazis had won the war, their definition of good would have become the standard. But the reality is, we all know, deep down, that the Nazis were wrong. That implies that good is a fixed standard, like gravity, not a flexible opinion. Biology tells us that the primary drive of every living thing is survival. Pass on your genes, survive at all costs. But humans do something that breaks the laws of biology. We practice radical altruism. We honor the soldier who jumps on a grenade to save a squad of strangers. We weep for the firefighter who runs into a burning building to save a child who isn't his. From an evolutionary standpoint, this is a defect. It removes your genes from the pool. But from a moral standpoint, we call it the highest form of good. The fact that we value self-sacrifice proves that we are tuned to a frequency that doesn't come from biology. It comes from the Creator. Section 2. The Factory Settings Paradox. This addresses the hardest question for the modern skeptic. Why did God make me this way if he hates it? In physics, the second law of thermodynamics defines entropy. This is the tendency of any closed system to move from order into disorder. Energy dissipates. Metal rusts, buildings crumble. Things do not naturally get better over time, they get worse. Theology teaches that when humanity disconnected from God, spiritual entropy entered the system. We are not born as factory pristine versions of humans. We are born into a state of decay. We accept this logic in medicine without question. If a child is born with a genetic predisposition to heart disease, we don't say, "God made him this way, so we should celebrate the heart disease." No. We recognize it as a defect, and we fight it. The Bible argues that sin is a hereditary infection. It twists our desires. It twists a desire for justice into revenge. It twists a desire for intimacy into lust. It twists a desire for security into greed. Just because a desire is natural or born in you does not make it good. A tumor is natural, but it is fatal. We cannot trust our factory settings because the factory was sabotaged. This leads to the ultimate objection. If God knew Adam would crash the system, why didn't he stop him? The answer lies in the definition of love. You can program a robot to say, "I love you." But the robot doesn't love you, it is just executing code. For love to be real, it must be voluntary. If God had made a world where we were forced to be good, he would have created a universe of biological robots. God decided that the risk of the fall was worth the possibility of real relationship. He didn't want prisoners. he wanted children. Section 3. The Evidence, Intent versus Character. If we want to know what the Creator is like, we have to look at what he built. Skeptics often suggest the universe is an accident. But physics tells us the universe is incredibly fragile. Scientists call this the fine-tuning of the universe. The most famous example is the cosmological constant, or the energy density of empty space. Quantum physics predicts the energy of space should be massive, but astronomers observe that it is actually incredibly small, just enough to push the universe apart without ripping galaxies to shreds. The difference between the theoretical number and the actual number is 1 part in 10 to the power of 120. Achieving this balance by accident is like throwing a dart from the edge of the universe and hitting a specific atom on Earth. This proves the Creator is intentional. He wants us here. A Creator who calibrates gravity and energy to a razor's edge, specifically to sustain fragile life, is not indifferent. He is invested. But nature is still ambiguous. To know his heart, we need him to speak. Jesus of Nazareth is the Creator stepping out of the shadows. But don't just take the Bible's word for it. The most compelling evidence for Jesus' goodness actually comes from his enemies, people who had no reason to lie for him. The Babylonian Talmud, Sanhedrin 43a, accuses Jesus of sorcery. They admitted he had supernatural power, but tried to label it as magic. Celsus, a second-century critic, argued that Jesus learned Egyptian magic. Again, the critic admits the power while trying to attack the source. But here is the definitive moment. If Jesus had the power of a sorcerer or a tyrant, how did he use it? When the soldiers came to arrest him, one of his disciples cut off the ear of the high priest's servant, a man named Malchus. A bully would have cheered. Jesus stopped the violence and healed the man who was arresting him. A tyrant uses power to destroy. Jesus used power to restore. Section 4. The Rebel Base Fallacy. Here is the thought process of the skeptical believer. If God is a strict rule follower and I like freedom, maybe I'll just go to hell. All my friends will be there. It'll be a party. This is based on a fundamental misunderstanding of reality. Hell is not a place God invented to torture people. Hell is simply the absence of God. In the 4th century, the philosopher St. Augustine realized that evil is not a thing in itself. It is a parasite. Cold is just the absence of heat. Darkness is just the absence of light. Augustine argued that evil is simply the absence of good. This means you cannot build a kingdom of evil, or hell, and fill it with good things like friendship or fun. If you remove the good, the only thing left is the empty, cold vacuum of that absence. The Bible confirms that God is not just a ruler. He is the energetic source of every good experience you have ever had. James chapter 1 says, "Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights." Think of the Creator as a star, and humanity as a planet orbiting it. The star provides heat, light, and gravity. If a planet decides it wants freedom from the star's gravity, it can break orbit. It can drift into the dark. But the moment it leaves the Goldilocks zone, the oceans freeze, the light fades, the atmosphere collapses. Hell is the rogue planet drifting into the void. Since God is the only source of friendship, laughter, and joy, when you leave him, you don't take those things with you, you leave them behind. You cannot choose the darkness and still keep the light. Section 5. The Severity of Goodness. This brings us to the most offensive part of the Christian claim. I am a generally good person. Why would a good God send me to hell just because I'm not perfect? Imagine I offer you a glass of crystal clear water. I tell you, it is 99% pure water and only 1% sewage. Would you drink it? No. Heaven is a place of zero entropy. If God lets you into heaven with just 1% of your greed or pride, you will eventually ruin the perfection. He isn't being petty by demanding perfection. He loves the world too much to let us ruin the next one. We must distinguish between a murderer and a surgeon. Both use a knife. Both cause blood. But the murderer cuts to destroy. The surgeon cuts to save. God's severity is the act of a surgeon containing a contagion. If you have the gangrene of sin, you cannot enter the sterile room. You would infect the patient. So God has two options. forced sterilization, which makes you a robot, or quarantine. Hell is the cosmic quarantine. It is not a torture chamber for people who miss the cut. It is the only place left for people who refuse the cure. The punishment is simply being locked in a room with other people who also refuse to be cured of their greed and pride, forever. This is why the cross matters. God looked at us, good people who are nevertheless infected with 1% sewage, and knew we couldn't clean ourselves. So he built a decontamination chamber. Jesus didn't come to teach us to be nice. He came to absorb the infection. He took the virus into his own body, let it kill him, and rose with the antibody. God doesn't send people to hell for being bad. He allows people to go to hell because they are too proud to be healed. Conclusion, the diagnosis. We started this audit by asking, is God safe? The answer, famously written by C.S. Lewis in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, remains the best summary. He wrote, safe? Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king, I tell you. God is not a tame pet. He is a surgeon. A pet comforts you while you stay sick. A surgeon cuts you to get the cancer out. If you want a God who will pat you on the head and tell you that your 1% infection is fine, you don't want a good God. You want an enabler. You have a choice. You can choose the cure. You trust the surgeon. You submit to the knife, and you admit you cannot fix yourself. It hurts to lose your pride, but you gain life. Or, you can choose the quarantine. You walk out. You keep your freedom. You keep your infection. But remember, you are walking away from the only one who can heal you. God isn't good because he validates your choices. God is good because he is the only surgeon who lays down his own life to save the patient. This is the quantum disciple.